redemption. The dictionary defines it as deliverance from sin, atonement for guilt. But are there, or should there be, limits to the kinds of sins that can be redeemed? And what about mass murder? One of the warlords who terrorized Liberia during the country's 14-year civil war was a man who called himself General Butt Naked. He ran a brigade of child soldiers, most of whom he'd kidnapped and taught to rape, cannibalize, and torture. In 1996, General Butt Naked converted to Christianity and laid down his weapons. Today, he goes by the name Joshua Milton Blahi. And with the war in Liberia over, he's traveling the country as a preacher, asking for forgiveness from his victims. Filmmakers Danielle Anastasian and Eric Strauss spent 5 years following Blahi around Liberia, making a documentary called The Redemption of General Butt Naked. And Strange Chimps wanted to know if it's really possible for a man who's admitted to 20,000 crimes against humanity to change.
Absolutely, and not only is it possible, but if somebody attempts to make a change like this, how does that play out in the real world? It's such a sea change. It's really difficult to wrap your mind around any kind of claim of transformation that large. And as you watch the film, as he engages in these everyday acts of begging for forgiveness from his victims, you're constantly trying to sort of reconcile what he did in the past with what he's trying to be now. And it's incredibly, incredibly challenging.
So how did this happen, that a guy who was, in a sense, raised to be a warlord turned around, walked away, and now seems to be genuinely asking for forgiveness?
What happened to General Butt Naked, and what really was the, you know, the stimulus for his transformation, really fell down to, you know, really came down to one man named Pastor John Kunkun, who was an evangelical preacher, minister at the time in, and still is, he's a bishop today, during the mid-90s, in 1996. And he was a part of a group of evangelical preachers who were attempting to have an effect on the conflict, a positive effect to end the conflict that was really ravaging their country at the time. I mean, this was at the height, 1996 was really at the height of much of the conflict in Liberia. And as Pastor Kuhn tells it, you know, these men decided to reach out to the warlords to try to speak to the warlords and tell them what they were doing was, you know, they weren't the heroes they saw themselves as, defending their ethnic group or their people, if you will. They were perpetrating atrocities across the nation and causing, you know, mass suffering. So these preachers, and they were very, you know, in many ways extremely courageous men, went out into the front lines, and Pastor Kuhn went to this area of Monrovia that was controlled by General Butt Naked and his fighters, and approached him, just walked right up and entered his headquarters and spoke boldly to General Butt Naked and told him, you know, that what he was doing was, to use Pastor Kuhn's vocabulary, a sin. And a crime, you know, in the eyes of God. And that really became, that moment between those two men became the beginning of the end for the persona of General Butt Naked. It was after that moment and a series of meetings that would continue to happen between these two men that led General Butt Naked to lay down his weapons and depart from the front line in late 1996 and become Joshua Milton Blahi, which is what he goes by today.
And, I mean, I suppose he could have just walked away, disappeared somewhere, made a new life under a completely new name. He didn't choose to do that.
When he did walk away, there was a lot of pressure for him to rejoin the war. The war kind of died down soon after his conversion, and then it sort of ramped back up for a second phase. And during that second phase, there was a lot of pressure from members of the Kron tribe and other political figures that he was involved with for him to rejoin the fighting. So he went into exile. He got married. He started a family. And he tried to stay as far away from the fighting in Liberia as possible to avoid any temptation of kind of sliding back into his old persona. So he spent several years outside of Liberia. And our film really picks up when he decides to return. He was living in exile in the Buduburam refugee camp in Ghana, where a number of Liberian refugees still live today. We sort of follow him from his journey from Buduburam back to Liberia, where he attempts to reconcile with a lot of his victims' families.
Why does he want to do this?
I mean, this is really, in many ways, a lot of hopefully what our film is challenging our audience to think about, to acknowledge. I don't think there's an easy answer for that. I mean, if you were to listen to Blaise say it, he claims to have a full understanding of Christianity, of his new faith, and what he needs to do to truly become a Christian and to truly put down that persona of General But Naked. I think he acknowledges that he can never truly balance the scales of his past, but in his words, he believes that, this is the only way to sort of, the only way to truly be a Christian is to continue on that journey, attempting to balance the scales of his past. And of course, what Danielle and I try to put forth in the film is if that is even possible, and number one, and also to really examine a man like Blaise's motivations. And I think that becomes worth looking at when you see him engage with these, you know, his former victims, when you see him make his way across Liberia, when you see what happens to him when the Truth and Reconciliation Commission comes to Liberia. You know, we sort of judge him through his actions and present him through his actions, not just his words. And it becomes a much more complicated understanding of a man and his motivations.
Sorry, I didn't mean to kill your brother. You know that's war. I'm sorry, man. I beg you. Forgive me. No, don't just go like that. I beg you. I beg you, Satan.
I'm already happy.
I killed your brother out of madness. But please, I will be able to play the brother for you. I may not be able to do everything that your brother can do, but I will stand there whenever you need a brotherly counsel. Whenever you need a brotherly protection, try to call on me. I beg you, please. It's the toughest moment in my life to see somebody who had hurt in the past. She's still crying. I killed her brother.
Where she gone?
I shot him and, you know, chopped him dead. Now, when she reminded me, I felt so evil.
Sorry.
I killed their brothers, killed their sisters, raped them, crippled them. They are right not to forgive me.
When he's trying to apologize, I mean, there's a moment in the film when he's talking to a woman and he says, "I'm sorry I killed your brother. I didn't mean to." Well, yes, he did mean to, don't you think? I mean, he killed people on purpose.
Yeah, I mean, I think that in moments like that, you get a sense of his real struggle with his past actions. And I think in the film itself, in the beginning of the film, that moment where he's approached this woman and he's apologizing for the crimes that he committed in the past, you can see that he's really struggling to find a way to interact with these people, and he can come across as very belligerent in some ways. You know, at one point he uses the language, "You have to forgive me."
He's putting a lot of pressure on her to forgive him, and as a viewer, I mean, I sort of feel like that's not something he's entitled to ask for.
Sure, and it's absolutely very uncomfortable.
What was the most moving of those for you?
One moment that was perhaps the most moving for me, or one of the reconciliation moments, was when Blaise approached Lovetta and her daughter. Because I think that initially you think of these reconciliation moments as about Blaise. But as you really spend time and you witness them and you witness the hurt and the pain that has happened to these Liberians, I think in the end that those moments are truly about the victims. And Blaise is not really what is important to us at those moments. In many ways, it is the healing that is taking place, hopefully, for those victims, that ability to peace with their past and confront it, you know, in the face of blight and move beyond it and heal. And I think for me, when Lovetta's daughter was confronted with Blai, you know, you see her on camera crying. And I, at the time that Danielle and I were shooting, just assumed, you know, this poor girl, you know, she's terrified. You know, this man who murdered her, or this man's army murdered her father and caused, you know, wounded her for life. And she's crying. And I just assumed it was from fear. But later she said that she was crying because it touched her to see someone who had hurt her come forward and beg for her forgiveness. As a non-Liberian, as a Westerner, my mind, the way I necessarily understand justice and forgiveness, I never would have went there in my mind. I don't think I would have sat there if I had been the wounded party and had a thought like that. And that touched me. I mean, this was a girl who was 14, 15 years old, and I thought that was an extremely profound way to approach, you know, reconciliation and healing.
So does it make a difference for the victims, a permanent difference, do you think, when Blai comes up and when they can confront him and when he can say he's sorry?
Yeah, I mean, I think to some extent, regardless of whether or not we believe Blai, you notice that a lot of the victims that he approaches are sort of using the situation for their own means, for their own ability to heal and move beyond the past. I mean, they certainly don't expect a perfect man before them. But DeConso, who we continue to be in touch with, has expressed numerous times that just the ability to meet Blai and to experience that moment of reconciliation was kind of like a weight lifted off of his shoulders. The ability to forgive for him was extremely beneficial on a psychological level, regardless of whether or not Blai actually deserves it. And, you know, that's something that viewers will make their own judgments and reserve for themselves. But it is undeniable that the ability to bestow forgiveness on somebody can have really powerful effects for the person who's doing it.
Blai does also has reached out and is doing a fair amount of work with some of the former child soldiers. You know, people he kidnapped or brought into his army, hooked on drugs, taught to fight. He says that he's the one who should do it. Do you agree?
I think this is a more, you know, this is one of those extremely complicated issues. Because as you see in the film, you know, Danielle and I were there witnessing Blai reaching out to former fighters of all the different factions, attempting to act as a role model for them and show them that you can change, you can, in Blai's words, you know, he accepted Christianity and is, you know, acting as a preacher, attempting to turn these young men's lives around, bring them out of the slums and the ghettos where they are involved in drugs and crime and turn their lives around. And on the one hand, that's extremely admirable. And in many ways, Blai is very well placed to do that since, you know, as many of the fighters have said to Danielle and I, and they say in the film, as bad as they were, he was worse. So to see someone like that be able to pull himself out of a sense of guilt at what they've done and move on with their lives and reach out to people, he is a powerful symbol to those young men. Simultaneously, though, I think it's also very uncomfortable to witness Blai sort of reassuming a position of power with these young men. You know, there is a scene in the Victory Church where he is encouraging and getting these men, all of these young men worked up about changing their lives, but it is somewhat, you know, frighteningly reminiscent of what he must have been like on the streets of Monrovia in 1996 as General Butt Naked, kind of working up these young men to commit atrocities. And I think that's where that uncomfortable moment lies. And it kind of brings us back again to reexamining Blai's, you know, motivations. Is this a guy who put down one sort of you know, means to power and has picked up another? I mean, what is really motivating him at these moments? Because it is a very uncomfortable place for a figure like him to be in again.
I want to tell you something this morning. This very nation that has rejected you. This very citizen that said nothing good come out of you. I stand in the name of the Lord this morning. I say, go show yourself to Liberia. I stand before you this hour. I say, go show yourself to your family. Go show yourself to the society. I command you this morning, in the name of the Lord, in the mighty name of the Lord, that you will go and they will see no limitation in you. I declare that limitation of you are broken. I declare it broken. I declare it destroyed by the power in the mighty name of Jesus.
Do you like him?
That's a good question. I mean, I think... in some ways, I think that the question itself, you know, the reality of the situation is a little bit bigger than that. I mean, it's hard to sort of distill it down to, you know, whether or not you like somebody. I mean, he is a perpetrator of atrocities, and it's kind of hard to get around that on some level, but he can be a very likable person to be around. But every time you might begin to feel that way, your mind sort of automatically wanders back to what it is he did, and that always presents a certain level of discomfort.
I would also, you know, I completely agree with Danielle on that and say that on many levels, it's not really an issue of like. I mean, is he a likable guy? Yeah. Are there moments when we get on with him? Yeah. We spent 5 years documenting his journey. At the end of the day, though, it gets to the issue of is he genuine or not as well. I mean, is he likable? Sure. Does it matter? You know, I'm not sure it necessarily does. At the end of the day, he is guilty of these crimes. And that takes us to another step, which is, you know, is the issue of justice. You know, again, is he genuine or not? Is he sincere or not? Even if he is, that only takes you so far in the questions surrounding individuals like Blahi and other Liberian perpetrators.
Redemption is at the heart of this film. What does redemption mean to you?
I think that I've come to understand throughout the process of making of this film the idea of redemption as a process. It's not an absolute place or a state of being. Bishop John Kunkun, who we spoke to in the film, actually kind of makes this point that it is a journey. It's not a place that you can arrive at. And that's very much how I see Joshua Blahi, his attempts at reconciliation. The redemption of General Butt Naked is not a fact. It's more a process, sort of a state of attempting to, you know, right the wrongs of his past. And I don't think that, you know, in my mind, I don't feel that it's so much that he's achieved redemption, but he's attempting to. And it really remains to be seen through his actions. You know, will he continue to stay on the path that he's chosen and continue to sort of develop? Or will he sort of fall back into kind of a more selfish motive?
Daniel Anastasian and Eric Strauss directed The Redemption of General Butt Naked. Anne Strangeham spoke with them. Say Something About Child's Play, a poem by Nigerian Chris Albani. The soldier asks the boy, choose, which do I cleave, your right arm or left? The boy, 10, maybe 9, says, neither. Or when I play like a bird with a broken wing, I will smudge the line of the hopscotch square, let the darkness in. The soldier asks again, choose, which do I cleave, your right leg or left? Older in this moment than his dead father, the boy says, neither. Or when I dance the spirit dance, I will stumble, kick sand in the face of light. The boy says, take my right eye, it has seen too much, but leave me the left, I will need it to see God.